The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Dr. Stephen Serbin presents his lecture, The Jewish Ethical Will.
What's an ethical will? As you all have been sitting here for a little while, people have been wandering up to me and saying, is this, you know, where you write a will to leave your earthly wares to your heirs? That's not what this is. An ethical will is not a legal document. It has nothing to do with leaving your material possessions, should you have any. It's about leaving your spiritual legacy to the next generation or to whomever your target audience is. And you will see by the end of the workshop that might not be just your children and grandchildren, and in fact, it may not actually be directed to your children at all. So a testamentary will, of course, is a legal document, and presumably all of you have one, but my guess is that most of you don't have an ethical will, and even if you do, you will probably want to revise it after this workshop. By the way, not a living will. A living will instructs your family or your doctors or your legal agents about what end-of-life planning you desire if you're not cognizant enough to instruct them about that at end of life. So this is your opportunity to transmit your values, your priorities, your hopes and dreams, really your core values to your significant others, whoever that is. Could be students, could be congregants, whomever, and we'll talk more about target audiences in a minute. We think, well, it's a will. I'll be dead by the time anybody sees it. Not necessarily, as you'll discover, we'll talk about when and where you might want to roll out your ethical will, and of course it often is at your death, but not always. In fact, these days, not even usually. So we will talk about that as well. It's sort of like the existential question. Many of you went to college at a time when everybody had to study existentialism, so you know the existential question. When you're lying on your deathbed and you know that your demise is imminent, and you're going to ask yourself, so what was it all about? What did my life mean? What was the significance of my life, or life in general? But yes, it's sort of that, but it's also when you're lying on your deathbed, what do you want to transmit to your loved ones, to your significant others? What values, what priorities, what hopes, what expectations? What other than material possessions are you going to leave to them? Well, up until about 150 years ago, written ethical wills, didn't really deal with anything except ritual matters and religious matters. Over the last 150 years, while that is still included in many ethical wills, now most ethical wills involve family lore, moral aphorisms, Jewish identity, core values, Israel, Klal Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. What you decide to incorporate in your ethical will is up to you. And very shortly, we're going to talk about 20 or 25 different reasons why one might write an ethical will, and 20 or 25 subjects that you might want to include. So the practice of actually writing ethical wills didn't start until about 1,000 years ago. Before then, yes, rabbis and I'm sure fathers and grandfathers left verbal instructions, but there really weren't any written ethical wills until the first and best known probably ethical will that we have as a written document from about 1,000 years ago. And you'll be receiving at the end of the program a little handout that has about 10 ethical wills, beginning with that oldest ethical will, which is strictly religious and very rigorous, and rather long and tedious, up to some modern ethical wills written in the last 25 years, which have a totally different tone, some of them very brief, and some of them not dealing with religious or ritual matters at all, but just Jewish identity or Jewish value, core values, and that sort of thing. We will give you an opportunity to review those on your own time, and I would encourage you to do that. Some of those formats you'll want to embrace, perhaps, and some not, and it's often important to know what you don't like as well as what you do like. Also, there'll be a lot of subjects that will come up in these ethical wills that, yep, that resonates with me. I want to convey something like that to my target audience, and other topics that, no. And so I encourage you to do that, but we will review one ethical will, a contemporary one that I've chosen just because it's a very sweeping ethical will that includes a lot of different formats and a lot of different subjects, so you can see the breadth that you could cover in an ethical will if you wanted to. So let's remember that when you're sharing with someone your core values, this can be an inspiring and edifying tool, but if the ethical will is presented in a tone which is very controlling or very critical, it can be a dagger in their heart as well. And so I think you have to be cautious about the tone, and you have to bear in mind not only what's important to you to express, but what you really want to convey to your target audience. Because ultimately, the impact you have on your target audience is more important than what you want to get off your mind, okay? It seems so self-evident, you'll see at the end of the workshop, that you ought to write an ethical will, you'll wonder, why haven't I done this before? Why haven't I heard about this before? And why isn't every serious Jew writing an ethical will? And there are a couple of reasons. One is because most people haven't even heard of the concept. And even if they have, they've never been taught anything about ethical wills. They don't have the tools, really, to write an ethical will, or think they don't. There are other reasons, important reasons. One is that most, no, I wouldn't say most, but many contemporary Jews don't feel as if their knowledge of Yiddishkeit is deep enough, is rich enough, that they can really write a credible ethical will. And so they feel uncomfortable really expressing their core values as if it would be amateurish or inauthentic. Also, we live in an era where there's a rampant relativism, where the generations, you know, things are changing so rapidly and everything is so relativistic that people, older generations, feel uncomfortable about making assertions, ethical, moral, religious assertions to younger generations. There's such a schism. 1,000 years ago, there wasn't a huge schism from generation to generation, but there certainly is now. I contend that makes it even more important for you to share your values, for your loved ones to know where you're coming from and where you hope they're going. And you can help to ensure that through an ethical will. You don't have to be a polished author in order to write an ethical will. No one's expecting you to be Shakespeare. You don't have to be as profound or learned as the Rambam. No one is expecting you to be Rashi. But as one wise man said, what comes from the heart enters the heart. If your target audience realizes that you are deadly serious and earnest about what you're saying in your ethical will, if you're the authentic you, you're expressing the authentic you in your ethical will, then your spiritual self-portrait, the portrait of your values and your priorities, will be osmosed. It will be absorbed. What comes from the heart enters the heart. Now, on that note, I'm going to violate the first tenet of lectureship. By the way, this is the 10th time I've done a spiel of some sort at a retreat. This is the third time for this workshop at the retreat. The last time was actually here about 5 years ago, but on other topics, and even humorously enough, I was the first keynote speaker at a JLI retreat because 17 years ago, Rabbi Epstein and I helped organize the retreat, the whole concept, and organize the first few retreats. And we were in this remote mountain ski resort up in the Rockies. And the keynote speaker for Wednesday night didn't make it. So Rabbi Epstein came to me right before dinner on Wednesday night and said, our keynote speaker is not going to make it. Can you do an impromptu keynote address? So ironically, I was the first keynote speaker. So we've come a long way, baby. So why compose a will in the first place? Well, to explain your fundamental funeral and memorial instructions, which is actually pretty common in ethical wills, but by no means in all of them, to express love and praise, express gratitude to man and God, to request or to grant forgiveness, express disappointment or anger. And yes, you might not think that's appropriate to have in an ethical will, but I can tell you, reading ethical wills, examples, you'll find that, provide solace and reassurance about death, either death in general or one's imminent death, if you had, say, metastatic pancreatic cancer, something like that, MS, and you know you're going to be dying sometime soon, seek revenge or vindication. Hopefully that won't be the main motivation. Vent fear or uncertainty about death. Give practical guidance and advice. There is a lot of that. And you'll see examples of that in the one that we're going to read. Provide spiritual inspiration or spiritual legacy. Articulate your core values. Teach key Torah or Talmudic lessons, convey religious and ritual priorities, foster Jewish unity and continuity, foster family cohesion and tradition, which for a lot of people is an important topic, share your hopes and dreams, either for yourself or for your loved ones, what you expect them to do or hope they'll do, honor teachers and mentors, share your analysis of Jewish history or society in general, share your vision of the future, provide a guide to your self-improvement, and I would add one more that I think is important, fulfill your biblical obligation. What is that? I think we all remember the Shema prayer. These words which I command you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them to your children. All right, so you've decided, I've convinced you that there are good reasons for you to write your ethical will. And of course, for each of you, those reasons may be different. But as you go down that list, you check off the ones that you think are germane to you. Okay, so what do you include in your ethical will? Well, of course, if you know why, that tends to dictate the what. So some of this may appear repetitive, but on the next page, what should you include? Core values and priorities, your philosophy of life and death, Jewish history and mission, as you see it, of course, your vision for the future, your definition of key concepts, like what does soul mean to you? What does success mean to you? That's an interesting one that is included in pivotal insights and epiphanies, key scriptural passages that have really resonated with you, pearls of wisdom that you want to pass on and pitfalls that you want your loved ones to avoid, meaningful rituals and practices or mitzvot, ritual and religious expectations for your family, very common, wishes and goals for the family. A lot of folks include something about their family roots or traditions, more specifically, if there's some spiritual legacy you specifically want to leave to them, duties and obligations, your own, and duties and obligations that you feel your family members or significant others have, personal goals and objectives, important life events and experiences, special people, places, and things. A lot of people include, this person really had an impact on me. Or when I went to Jerusalem for the first time, or I went to Rome for the first time and I'm standing there in front of the Arch of Titus celebrating the destruction of Israel, and some chutzpahdik Israeli has carved at the base, Am Yisrael Hai. 2,000 years after the, not that I am suggesting that you deface important historic monuments, but I've had people say, I saw that and it just struck me. You know, as powerful as the Roman Empire was, that hasn't existed for 1,600 years. But the Jews are still here, dancing on Titus's grave. So, there may be vignettes like that in your lifetime, people, places, experiences, things that you've read that have really resonated with you. Important teachers and mentors, your life in retrospect, personal achievements, and also personal regrets, personal repentance, forgiving others and asking for forgiveness, praising others and expressing gratitude, of course, funeral and memorial instructions, which we've talked about. I would add a couple more key Jewish traditions. If there are a few traditions, like lighting the Shabbat candles is one that's frequently mentioned. And or frequently, I expect my daughters and my granddaughters to light Shabbat candles, duty to ensure Jewish continuity, I would probably add as well, if you feel that that is an important thing to share, and that's actually mentioned in the one that we're going to read. And then your view of Tikkun Olam. In this day and age, it's popular for people to say, well, the whole purpose of Judaism, and then to some extent, my purpose is Tikkun Olam, the cleansing or purification of the world under God's dominion. So now you've decided you should write an ethical will. You know what reasons why you want to do that. And you've even decided what you want to include in it. And you've kind of checked those things that resonate with you on those first two lists. But who are you writing it for? And, as I mentioned earlier, well, the first thing we think of is our children or our grandchildren. But that's not the only audience that people write a Jewish ethical will for. So we're going to march through the next page. Who is the target audience? Okay. Could be your spouse, your children or grandchildren, other family members, friends, or colleagues. Of course, for teachers and rabbis, students, disciples, or congregants. Your Jewish community, or even, the Chabad movement, or the conservative movement, or whatever. And sometimes people are living even larger than that, and they want to speak to Jewish leadership or the Jewish people as a whole, or some major Jewish organization as a whole, the media, Israeli government. Right now, we might have folks having something to say about to the Israeli government or the U.S. government, for that matter. Your employees, your enemies or critics. And there are actually some ethical wills that address, thoughts to their enemies or their critics. But I would add a few things. First of all, it's very important. The most important beneficiary of your Jewish ethical will is you, because your ethical will is going to force you to distill your core values. What is really important to you? Is it a credit card with a $50,000 limit, or making a contribution to Tikkun Olam, or whatever it is? What are your core values? What are your key priorities? It will force you to distill that. And no matter what impact you have on your intended target, it's going to have a tremendous impact on you, I can guarantee you. But there are other folks you might want to add to the target audience, your bar or bat mitzvah child or grandchild, bride or groom, a Jewish convert, or perhaps a potential Jewish convert, and you want to share your core Jewish values with them and see if that resonates with them. Curious non-religious Jews who may say to you, you know, why do you believe this? Or why is, in this day and age, why is Judaism important to you? And for that matter, curious non-Jews. So all those are potential audiences. And remember, it may not be just one of those. As you go down that list, you may say, yep, I want them to get it. But you know what? I want them to get it too. And there may be several target audiences. And if that's true, you need to bear that in mind as you're crafting your ethical will. All right. So now you know why you want to write a will, what you want to include in it, and who you want the will to be exposed to. But when and where do you roll it out? Of course, when you die and your testamentary will is read to your heirs, that would be a logical time for your spiritual legacy or your ethical will to be read as well. But there are many other venues and times when you might want to share your ethical will before you're dead. And so, of course, at your funeral or unveiling, when the testamentary will's being read, yes. But you might say in your ethical will, on my yard site, I want my children or my children and my grandchildren to read my ethical will on my yard site. Or at Yom Kippur, during a serious life crisis, you're getting open heart surgery, or you're getting chemotherapy and radiation for cancer, God forbid, after a spiritual epiphany that suddenly changes your Jewish trajectory. Of course, you could do it after studying about ethical wills or attending an ethical will workshop. It's my sincere hope that right after that, you'll create an ethical will and feel like you may want to share it before you die. You may want to share it when you're doing an important lecture or speech, or, of course, if you are writing something that's going to be published. I think a really good time to do it is when your children or grandchildren are going off to college. And I think that's a really critical time for you to share your core values with your children or grandchildren. Of course, when making aliyah, when converting to Judaism, or when discussing conversion or Judaism with a non-Jew. So we've talked about the basics. This is why you would write it. This is what you would include in it. Now you know who you're writing it for, when you're going to roll it out, and under what circumstances. And that is already one methodology for how to create an ethical will. But I'm going to give you three other models that are simpler than the what, why, how, who, and so on. One is called the free association method, And this is basically where you don't write the ethical will initially. You just jot down thoughts or things that you think you want to include in the you hear a lecture, you read a book, you have a life experience, you jot it down, you put it in your ethical will folder, and over time you accumulate, you know, quite a few of these little nuggets. But there's no real order to it. There's no organization. And then at some point you feel impelled to actually write the ethical will. So you've got some cuts of meat, but you don't have a skeleton yet. And so at some point you start to say, all right, on this nugget, here's what I want to say about that. On Israel, here's what I want to say about that. On my core values, here's what I want to say about that. Or that epiphany that I had when I was watching ETV, here's what I want to say about that. And then you start to organize it into an outline, but you're still not actually writing the ethical will yet. You're just sort of going from a bunch of ideas, which you then start to expand upon, and then you start to organize, and then finally you write a rough draft, and you'll see there's some things that are repetitive and you toss them out, some things that aren't so important, or maybe it sounded good, you know, 6 years ago, but right now you don't feel that it's germane, and eventually you come up with a rough draft and then you refine that. So that's sort of the free association method, you might say. The next method is really simple. You literally could walk out the door right now and do this, especially after what we've talked about in the workshop and the other tools that we have in front of you. This is Handing Down Our Jewish Heritage, written by Rabbi Bruce Caden and his wife Barbara years ago. This book, I think, is no longer in print, but I can distill it into just what you've got in those bullets. If you did just one paragraph on core Jewish values and concepts, one paragraph on ethical priorities and vision, one paragraph on key mentors and sources of inspiration, on pearls of wisdom for the next generation, and if you wish, on expressing gratitude, forgiving sins, and most people would include some summary of their life in retrospect or their value system in retrospect. So, I mean, and if you wish, burial and mourning instructions. So, I mean, you literally could walk out the door right now and write a paragraph on each of these things, and you would have a Jewish ethical will. I'm sure you'd probably want to refine it or revise it over time, but you could actually do it right now. There's another very quick and efficient way to write an ethical will, suggested in the book by Jack Reamer and Nathaniel Stamfer, So That Your Values Live On, Ethical Wills and How to Prepare Them. And if you flip to this page, you will see the model, the paradigm that they have suggested. And so there are basically six topic areas: opening statement, religious practices and insights, ethical values and concepts, your family, personal history, and closing remarks. And there are these prompts, and you can either skip one of these topic areas altogether, or you can, under these topic areas, add a couple to what's suggested here, or you may like all four of them, or only one of the four, but it gives you a very quick and easy format. So, for example, I write this to you, my children and grandchildren. Done. In order to transmit my spiritual legacy. Of course, that may not be your way to complete those sentences, but it's that easy. You know, the Jewish practices and rituals that mean the most to me involve Shabbat dinner, you know, or whatever it is, you know, Shabbat dinner and the blessings. You know, the Jewish teachings and concepts that move me the most are Tikkun Olam, you know, you fill in the blank. But the point is, it's as simple as that. You can walk out the door right now and complete each of these sentences, and you have a Jewish ethical will. No excuses. This isn't a lecture about Jewish ethical wills. This is a workshop about how you can create a Jewish ethical will. So you are now equipped with the tools. You know more about Jewish ethical wills than 99.9% of all the Jews on the face of the earth, for better or worse. This will just give you an example of the sorts of things that you can include. So even though we're only going to do about a third of this ethical will, there is a paragraph that that talks about mortality, a paragraph on ritual, a paragraph on Jewish identity, a paragraph on a historical perspective, on core values, rational analysis or assertions, on Zionism, on life experiences, historical perspectives, moral imperatives, ethical discourse, another paragraph on practical advice, and burial instructions. And that's only the third of the ethical will, but it gives you an idea of the range that you could include if you wanted to. So we'll start with the first paragraph, which is really on mortality, and this one will no doubt resonate with you. If you're hearing or reading my ethical will, it's quite possible that I am already deceased. Younger adults rarely reflect on their mortality since death seems like such a remote abstraction. But the older we get, the more imminent and ominous death appears. So the concept of transmitting a spiritual legacy becomes more compelling. I am reminded of a key portion of the Yom Kippur service that seems appropriate here. On Rosh Hashanah, the decree is inscribed, and on Yom Kippur, it is sealed. How many shall pass away, and how many shall be born? Who shall attain the measure of man's days, and who shall not attain it? Who shall be tranquil? And so on, as a passing cloud, as the wind that blows, as the floating dust, even as a dream that vanishes. So it starts right out with, you know, we're all going to die. Our existence is fleeting. And that sort of sets the tone for the whole ethical will, the gravitas of the ethical will. And then we'll go to the third paragraph on that page, this totally unrelated, on Jewish ritual. One of the most interesting and quintessential components of Jewish ritual is the many blessings that are phrased as follows. Blessed or praised are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us through your commandments. At first, this may seem like an odd statement. How does God sanctify the Jewish people by imposing so many obligations? Yet the answer is as stunningly simple as it is profound. Through these mitzvot, God gives man the opportunity to elevate himself above the terrestrial and the bestial, to a higher plane, to a level of holiness and spirituality, righteousness and morality that no other creature can achieve. In a very real sense, all those who have relied upon me to provide guidance, succor, and love have elevated my life to a higher plane such that it has a meaning and value far beyond my personal merit. You have all sanctified my life precisely because it hasn't been just about me. At the very bottom of the page is a paragraph on Jewish identity. Not many people can trace their family tree back 3,800 years, but my children and grandchildren can identify their ancestry on a direct line back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This means that my sons are operating under a binding covenant, the Jewish covenant with God. It also means that my progeny have a special mission. The purification of oneself, mankind, and the cosmos under God's dominion, tikkun olam. Whether or not my children or grandchildren want to comply with this contract or embrace this mission is irrelevant. As Jews, this is your identity, your duty, and your privilege. 150 generations of your ancestors have suffered, sacrificed, and persevered so that you could carry on the Jewish tradition and mission. Betrayal is not an option. You're Jewish, and that is the hand of cards God dealt you. Unlike many Jews of your generation, you can't plead ignorance. You have been saturated with Yiddishkeit, that is familiarity with Jewish things, your whole life, and with greater knowledge comes greater responsibility. Oof. Okay. That's a powerful message to transmit to your loved ones. Now, further down, like the third paragraph, historical perspective. I can find no other satisfactory explanation for the survival of the Jewish people over the past four millennia than the Jewish covenant with God. Perhaps Mark Twain, not Jewish, said it best in the September 1899 edition of Harper's Magazine. You've probably all read this at one point. The Egyptian, Babylonian, and Persian arose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, but they too are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torches high for a while, but they have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmity of age, no weakness of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but the Jew remains. What is the secret of his immortality? There's not a Jew writing this. It's Mark Twain. I propose, but now the author of the Ethical Will says, I propose to you that the covenant between God and the Jews is the reason, the only reason, that the Jewish people is still extant. We are God's messenger on earth. But have we become a messenger who has forgotten the message? As Heschel said, core values is the next paragraph at the bottom of page two. I recognize that my existence is fleeting and my significance is minuscule in the cosmic scheme of things. So I feel a fundamental need to elevate myself above sheer pursuit of the pleasure principle and beyond the shallow confines of self-absorption. I want my life to signify something more than just conspicuous consumerism. And Judaism provides me with the best vehicle I have ever found to do so. Even clerics and theologians have difficulty defining the concept of holiness, which I believe means the elevation or sanctification of mankind to a plane above the mere tangible and animal. Judaism is the best paradigm to achieve holiness without the escapism or fanaticism of most other religions. This is one of the main reasons that the Jews have had such an enormous impact on the secular as well as the religious development of civilization, quite disproportionate to their numbers. And we're running out of time, so I'm going to move right to page four. Here's one on life experiences. A Jewish epiphany came to mind while I was attending an event at a local Jewish community center. I gazed casually at the audience from the back of the hall. And it occurred to me what a well-educated, clever, cultivated, hardworking, successful, resourceful, benevolent, and law-abiding assembly of people this was. If the whole world was like that audience, or acted in accordance with Jewish principles, then there would be no more greed, corruption, cruelty, prejudice, oppression, etc. It would be like heaven on earth. But then that's just what the prophets were trying to tell us. The next paragraph in the middle of the page on Jewish identity. One of the great gifts which Judaism confers on its adherents is a profound sense of relatedness and rootedness. That is, we feel related on a horizontal plane, so to speak, to all Jews anywhere in the world who are living while we are. Even Jews who aren't very religious have this deep feeling of Am Echad, one people, which is why Jews always take care of our own. But we also have a profound sense of rootedness on the vertical plane, so to speak, because we feel firmly connected to all previous and future generations of Jews. We therefore have a personal obligation to redeem the suffering, sacrifice, and slaughter of past generations who longed for, died for, and died for lack of a sovereign Jewish state. We also have an obligation to transmit to future generations the rich Jewish heritage which we now enjoy. I don't want to be responsible for betraying this precious legacy, this divine gift transmitted from our patriarchs to our progeny. The 3,800-year chain of Jewish continuity is only as strong as the weakest link, and just one selfish or foolish generation can jeopardize the entire tradition. The next paragraph is interesting. It's totally different in tone from any of the other things so far in the ethical will. It's sort of a rational argument. Are we and the universe just an incredible accident, just a cosmic joke, or is the vast sweep of creation the work of a supreme creator? Reason compels us to suspect that an awesomely complex design suggests an awesomely complex designer. Universal laws suggest a universal lawgiver. Wondrous creation suggests a wondrous creator. Human intelligence suggests a supreme intelligence. Human conscience suggests a divine moral force. As Dennis Prager wrote, there are two possible explanations for creation: that everything comes from chance, or that everything comes from design and purpose. The choice is between sense and nonsense. Only have about 5 minutes. Moral imperatives is the next paragraph at the bottom of page 5. A little bit different take. Moral choice is the crux of Judaism, so every Jew is required to grapple with Jewish law and tradition. Intellectual freedom and universal education are Jewish prerequisites because they are necessary preconditions of moral choice. Judaism, by the way, was the first culture, society, or religion to require universal education for that reason. In fact, the biblical origin of the word Yisrael is to struggle with God. One of the great glories and burdens of Judaism is the cognitive challenge it presents. Unlike almost any other organized religion, Judaism not only permits, but actually encourages the constant process of debate and dialogue. Coming down the home stretch, practical advice. Sort of a totally different tone from what we've encountered so far. If you don't have a dream, you can't have a dream come true. But don't tarry too long, because life will blow by you at warp speed, and he who hesitates is lost. I believe in being proactive rather than reactive, which means that we have to be foresighted or futurists in a manner of speaking. So that's all practical advice. Don't have time to finish it because I do want to get to the last paragraph, which is burial instructions, which again is not in every spiritual or ethical will, but it is in many. And I cut off page 8, but the sentence there in page 9 begins something like, give all of my material possessions equitably to my 3 beloved sons, and through them to all my precious grandchildren. May God bless and protect them. Let my funeral be a joyous celebration of life, not a morbid homage to death. And then the Aharonic blessing. There could be much more detailed instructions like bury me in a plain pine box and that sort of thing, and make sure that, you know, all the appropriate Jewish burial laws are observed and all that sort of thing. So that gives you an example of a contemporary ethical will, or at least some excerpts from it. You get an idea of the vast sweep of things that you could include if you wanted to.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.